Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. I'm so excited today to have Dr. Kavita Chinayan as our guest. She's a respected cardiologist, a wife, a mother, and she wrote this incredible book called Shakti Rising, and she's going to share with us sort of these very deep secrets she has about how her spiritual practice has really guided her on an incredible path of self-realization. In this book, Shakti Rising, she teaches us how to become free from suffering and open more and more to our true selves. And she's looking at this process of self-realization through the lens of the 10 Mahavidyas. These are the goddesses who represent the light and shadow inside of us. Did I say that right? How would you say this?
Mahavidyas.
Okay. Mahavidyas?
Yes.
Okay. So welcome. And I'm so excited to share. I thought this book was incredible. I loved the goddesses, and I love the light and dark aspects and how they represent our struggle with humanity and our struggle with coming into being more self-aware. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you came? I thought your journey, the story of your own awakening was so interesting, and I was wondering if you could just share it with our listeners a little bit.
Sure. It's a story that many of us are probably very familiar with. I had this incredible drive and ambition to get somewhere, to do something from a very early age, and just kept going at it. You know, it was for me personally, the goal to achieve was academic achievement. But no academic achievement was ever enough. And so it was one thing after another, going to med school and going into residency and then cardiology fellowship and so on. And then I used to always feel like, oh, why am I always on a run like this? Why am I never happy and satisfied with and content with where I am? And so it was kind of a shocking revelation to see that, you know, I could be chasing these things forever and it would never end. And it somehow had felt normal up until then because everybody around me was chasing the same kinds of things or chasing something. And so this profound realization hit me that, that my constant chasing of things in the form of achievement or success or relationships or whatever it may be was never going to make me happy, and that I was looking in the wrong place. And it just hit me that what I really wanted was to stop seeking, and that every time, I got to one place, I felt like this was it, that this would end all my seeking, but that was never a permanent thing. Temporarily, it would ease up some of that energy of the seeking, but then it would start up again. So, and then I realized that, whoa, wait, what I really want, and then, you know, through my own inquiry and study over the years, it occurred to me that what all of us is really seeking is at the end of seeking.
Yeah, I love it how you talk in your book about how we instinctually want to move towards pleasure and away from pain. Do you think that our seeking is really about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, all of us really want happiness and contentment and to be free of that restlessness. And it may not even be, really life-threatening things such as anxiety or stress or trauma. even like the ennui of day-to-day life, you know, where it's like constant dissatisfaction with whatever is going on. It's this natural instinct moving towards, you know, all of us are really wanting to be free of that constant seeking, and to really stand in our own, you know, completeness. And it's that sense of lack that is what drives us constantly.
It's like we're seeking something on the outside, and your experience was that sadhana or spiritual practice put your attention on the inside, and that is where you found your peace.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. It was like, wait, if none of it, this is going to give me completion, then I'm looking in the wrong place. And so the more we look within ourselves, we find that actually that sense of incompletion or sense of lack we have is a myth. It doesn't exist. And in fact, when we dig deep enough, we find that we have always been whole and complete and blissful and content.
And that's when you discovered Shakti.
Yes, yes. You know, my path to Shakti was quite a convoluted one. And after years of practice of yoga and Vedanta and other practices, you know, I came into Shakti Sadhana, or this path of the goddess, and which was very, very revealing and beautiful and continues to be.
And can you tell us a little bit about what Shakti is?
Yes, absolutely. Shakti literally translates to power. In Sanskrit, Shakti means power. So, and power as in what? Or what really is that? And we think of Shakti as the feminine energy of creation, of life, which gives it a polarity. You know, it's like could God or the divine be feminine or masculine? And of course not. It's not like that. But here we are talking about Shakti being the power of something else, which is Shiva. And so Shiva in this context is unchanging, eternal awareness that has no attributes. So Shiva is basically attributeless, colorless, and what gives Shiva the power to create is Shakti. So they're actually one and the same. So it's
so
like
Shiva is
right
like
there.
The it's like the undifferentiated godlike consciousness, right?
Yeah.
And then
yes.
Shakti is sort of self-awareness. So Shiva thinking about himself is Shakti. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Right.
When, that separation happens with Shiva turning back to look at himself. Until then, it's all one thing, one, you know, blob of consciousness or awareness. And that first sense of separation happens when Shiva becomes self-aware. And that's when his self-awareness is Shakti. So Shakti is all of his powers, all of his creative powers, the power to create, destroy, sustain, all of that is Shakti.
And so these, in your practice, this Shakti is differentiated even further into these sort of 10 separate goddesses, right?
Yes. In this particular path, you know, these Mahavidyas, they're called Mahavidyas because Maha is means great and Vidya means wisdom. So these are 10 goddesses of great wisdom or cosmic wisdom. So, and of course, if you look at other traditions, Shakti is in countless forms. You know, the 64 yoginis and multiple other goddesses, and so it's countless forms of Shakti. But here we are specifically talking about 10 of her forms, which symbolize things like time and space, and the power of action and the power of stillness. And each of those things are represented by one of these goddesses.
Yeah, I really, it struck me as kind of they can represent aspects of ourselves, right? And
exactly.
Also at the same time, aspects of our, I don't know, stages along the path.
Yeah.
Do you think that's right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're all of that. And, you know, the beauty of the Mahavidyas is the more we get into it, they kind of start opening to us in very unique ways, which you may not even have heard of before. You know, they have been correlated to energy systems and so on in the past. But one way that really appeals to me is to see how they play within us. And what do they mean for us in our daily lives? And how can they manifest in our own awareness, in our own psyche, in our own lives? And they do. They manifest in our own, you know, and day-to-day, moment-to-moment awareness. So as both the shadow and the light.
Yeah, and I love the shadow and the light aspect of them. Like I've done a lot of shadow work myself, and in the energy medicine school that I teach in, we do a lot of shadow work too. And I've never really seen these goddesses before. But I feel like in that I've seen them before and sort of in a different context, but haven't seen them as like a way that we can look at our inner shadow. And what's in the way. And I think for you, the shadow, you make a distinction a lot between the I self or the small self, the egoic self, and the self with a capital S that would be more like the soul self, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. So yeah, in this book, I am referring to the ego as the I self, which is, as you know, is this conglomeration of things that we take ourselves to be, which is the body and the mind and our emotions and our thoughts. All of it put together, we think that that's who we are, that's our identity. And so anything that leads to that identification in this book, I've called it the shadow. And whatever leads away from that to our true nature, which is the self with a capital S, is the light.
It's almost like the unconsciousness is the shadow and consciousness is the light.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I think that these goddesses are very so interesting, and they're quite a cast of characters. And I was interested because years and years ago, I was probably in my 20s, I saw a book on these Hindu goddesses, and one of them completely freaked me out. and it's the one who's cutting off her own head, you know, is cut off her own head.
Yes.
And there's the acolytes around her drinking her blood. And there she was in your book. And I was like, and I've been actually terrified of that since I saw her in another book when I was in my 20s. And when I read your book, I went to her first because I felt like I needed to work through something. I'm like, clearly if I had such a strong reaction that years, you know, 20 years later, I'm still afraid of this one, I have to look at it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
She's kind of intense, isn't she?
She's the fiercest of them. Yeah, she's the fiercest of them. And, you know, what sets these Mahavidyas apart from the other goddesses in the pantheon is that the one thing they have in common is that they're all very fierce. Even
yes.
The ones that seem really beautiful and, you know, calm, like Bhuvaneshwari or Tripura Sundari, even they are very fierce because they have very strong shadow aspects to them. And so they're not these demure, subservient kinds of goddesses who happen to be consorts of male gods. They are very independent and they take center stage, you know, in this particular sadhana. Chinnamatta is the fiercest of all of them.
I know. It was so cool as I feel like I was sort of able to complete something with her and look at her and kind of more understanding and more of a light. And I thought it was so interesting that of all of the ones, that's the one that triggered me the most. It made me wonder. She has this sort of the shadow of hers about addiction, right? Addiction and attachment.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It made me wonder if that's the one that I need to work on.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a very sticky shadow, the one of addiction, because we normally think of addiction as addiction to something else, you know, be it substances or our phones or our, you know, electronics or whatever it may be. But the biggest addiction that all of us have in kind of shared something in common is this addiction to this identification as a separate egoic self. And we're constantly reinforcing that, you know, with our thoughts and with our actions. And we are so addicted to that personality that we think we are, that even when we are miserable, we'd rather be that than break away from it. So that addiction is really very powerful, which is why she's so fierce, you know, because you need a jolt like that to come out of that.
You probably really do need to cut off your own head.
Yes,
like, that's, you know, and that's and exactly, the head, if, yes. I wondered if the head represented the false self, you know?
Exactly, yes. She is, that head is represented by the ego. So, you know, she, Chinnamatta has, you know, dual beheading, because when the divine, see, in the tantric tradition that these goddesses come from, the goddess, Shakti, creates the universe, but unlike us, you know, or who give birth and we become separate from the child, Shakti gives birth to the universe and becomes the universe. Mm-hmm. So she is everything. There is nothing that is not Shakti. She is us. She is our shadow. She is our light. She is every aspect of who we are. So the first part of the beheading is like this, the divine coming into us with such a force and becoming so identified as this, you know, this body mind, that there is forgetfulness of our divine nature. So that's the first beheading into the shadow. And the second beheading happens when the shadow is realized and the ego dies and, you know, our heads are cut off. So that is the second beheading. So there are two beheadings in the symbolism of Chinnamatta.
So interesting. I loved your description of Tantra, which I've, you know, studied too and know something about, but I had never really heard it described the way you describe, which is exactly what you said, that the path of Tantra is to embrace all of, and not trying to turn away, you know, yes, from or move away from the parts of ourselves that we don't like, but instead fully lean into them. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, that is you know, a very unique thing of Tantra. It doesn't allow us to, you know, fake it or bypass anything. It's just whatever is arriving in our current experience is it. And, you know, just staying with that and opening to that. And it's, you know, embracing that, because only when we embrace our shadow can we move into the light. The more we push that away, the more the light becomes elusive.
Mm. Right. And the more we reject the shadow, we're pushing those things far deeper into the shadow, or deeper into unconsciousness. So yeah. it seems so, it's such a, I don't know, loving way, I guess, is how I felt, like it would be really self-loving. And
yes,
I also
exactly.
loved how feminine this path is.
Oh yeah. And that's the path of Shakti, you know, which is, it's all embracing and all loving, and nothing is excluded. And there is nothing in our lives or our paths that is disgusting or dirty or, and you'll see in the symbolism of these Mahavidyas, you know, they are fierce, and you see blood and gore all around them. They have no sense of, you know, this is pure and that is impure, because both are her, both are Shakti. So it's very loving, as you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's like radical self-acceptance or radical love. And
yeah.
I also think we're in a time, you know, I hear this sort of a theme of my radio show guests lately, about the rise of the feminine, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And how we're really needing, you know, as we come into this stage of accelerated consciousness that I feel like we're in now in humanity, that a big part of what we're having to do is to fully kind of embrace and heal the divine feminine.
Oh, yeah. I totally you know, get that and feel the same way.
So how do we work with these 10 goddesses? How is the best way to do this work?
You know, the first thing I would suggest is to kind of thumb through the book and see, you know, if there's, like, for instance, for you, it was Chinnamatta, like the first one that jumped out at you. And for me, it was Kali, the first one. And kind of figure out if there's one that you kind of resonate with. and delve deep into that. And that is one way of doing it, or just going from the first to the last, because the way it's laid out in this book is it's a sequential path. One leads to the other, to the other, to the other. And that's one way of doing that. And as you see, you know, each chapter has some exercises. So working with those and kind of integrating one before moving on to the other would be very helpful.
Yeah, and your exercises really have a lot to do with spiritual practice. So can you talk about how spiritual practice is a part of this and how it's changed your life?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, in terms of spiritual practice, the one constant core practice that I would recommend and which is also my practice is meditation. Because meditation has this, it provides, it makes us cultivate inner silence. And what I mean by that is that the constant jabbering, you know, commentator in the head needs to take a break. And so that inner silence is cultivated through meditation on a committed daily long-term basis. And the second thing that meditation does is it provides or it opens us to witnessing. And witnessing is this ability to stand back from experience and watch it as it's happening in a non-judgmental kind of way. So we can be doing something and feeling something and reacting to something and at the same time noticing what is happening. And when only in that context of the witness can some of these exercises, particularly the non-dual enquiry ones, they are most effective when that witness is cultivated. What we don't want from these practices is for it to become more mental noise. They have to really be transformative. And for that to happen, you know, this inner silence and witnessing are very, very essential.
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of, it's like really going to the gym. Like you have to do it every day for quite a while in order to, you know, get to that point. At least I've been a meditator my whole life. You know, my parents started me on transcendental meditation when I was 10.
Yeah. Right?
And so I've been doing it for a long time myself. And I think it takes time to kind of create that, the division that you were talking about between the I self and the real self. And meditation creates that, right? Where now you're having the real self, the self with a capital S, observing the I self.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, meditation facilitates that by the inner silence and the witnessing. But what really pushes us over the edge of that is the enquiry. And so the more we do the self-enquiry, the more we stand apart from the experience and watch it. Because meditation by itself, and you know, it doesn't get us over the edge a lot of times. For some, it may happen; for many, it may not. So, but the self-enquiry kind of practice, you know, it really helps in undoing some of our, you know, some of the wrong or some of the misconceptions we have about ourselves.
Right. So the inquiry is more about examining our thinking, disidentifying from our feelings. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's examining our thinking and our, you know, not just thinking, but our very core responses, our very core beliefs that we have about who we think we are and what we think must happen and the kinds of traumas and the kinds of things we carry from the past and about the future. And all of these are very, very core kind of, you know, beliefs that we have, which lie a little bit deeper than the thinking mind. So to get to that, you know, it really helps to have both meditation as well as a self-enquiry practice.
And how can people get your book or learn more about how to work with you?
Oh, so the book is available on Amazon, but also on my website, which is KavitaMD.com, K-A-V as in Victor, I, T as in Tom, H-A, KavitaMD.com. And there is a link to the book on there as well. And I am in the process of creating a course for around this, around the book, a 12-week course that delves deeper into these practices. And I also have like a free meditation program on my website as well.
Yeah, your website was beautiful. And I think I signed up for your meditation class. So,
I did.
And so thank you so much, Dr. Chinayan, for being with us. I thought your book was brilliant. And I'm going to keep working through that. So I really appreciate you being with me on the radio show today.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I so enjoyed talking with you. Thanks so much.
And thanks all of you guys for joining me today here on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time here on Empower Radio.